The shadows know.
Welcome, my wonderfully curious listeners, to another chilling installment of Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales. Tonight, we'll be journeying through the shadowy corridors of old-time radio, where whispers of dread and echoes of suspense still linger after all these decades. We begin with Creeps by Night, a short-lived but unforgettable series from the 1940s, hosted in part by the legendary Boris Karloff. This program specialized in psychological terror, stories that revealed just how frightening the human mind and human nature itself could be. From this series, you'll first hear Walk in Darkness, a tale where familiar surroundings twist into a nightmare of unseen footsteps and shadowed warnings. Then comes The Hunt, where what starts as a primal chase soon bends into something far more unnerving, blurring the lines between predator and prey in a game where fear itself is the true master. And finally, we descend into the depths of Macabre, a 1961 production from the Armed Forces Network, remembered for its haunting sound design and chilling originality. With only a handful of episodes produced, its legacy is all the more precious and remastered. Tonight's story, Final Resting Place, draws us into a meditation on death, destiny, and the inescapable end we all must face. It's a tale both stark and poetic, echoing the series' name in every beat. So, settle in, dim the lights, and prepare yourself for a journey through fear, suspense, and the uncanny from the golden age of radio that still haunt us today. Enjoy, you legends.
The Mystery Playhouse, a rebroadcast for the servicemen and women of the United Nations.
Good evening, this is Peter Lorre. The circumstances leading up to horror and tragedy are many times as innocent seeming as a Sunday school picnic, and the perpetrators of evil appear often as ordinary, normal human beings. Yes, but they are capable of conceiving acts of diabolic destruction, as you will hear tonight in the Mystery Playhouse. Listen now to Mr. Boris Karloff in Those Who Walk in Darkness. We look in on a scene taking place in a private room at Bayside Hospital. A man with heavily bandaged eyes lies restlessly in a bed. At his bedside are his wife, Valerie, a nurse, and a famous eye surgeon, Dr. Paul Wade. Dr. Wade looks strangely and intently at his patient.
Threatened at midnight and again in the morning, nurse.
Yes, doctor.
Well, doctor, what did you find? Will I be blind? Is it very bad?
Now, take it easy, Mr. Denton. There's nothing to worry about. Nothing at all.
You're sure? You aren't just saying that.
I'm quite sure.
Valerie, did you hear that? I'm not going to be blind. Valerie, where are you?
Right here, darling.
Did you hear? I won't be blind. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, darling. Marvelous.
You don't sound very excited. Valerie, don't you realize I'm going to see again?
She doesn't sound excited because I don't want you to be excited, Mr. Denton. You've got to relax. Try to sleep.
Sleep? With this ungodly pain? My eyes feel as though they were on fire.
That will stop as soon as the opiate I gave you takes hold. You'll be comfortable, I'm sure. Now, good night.
You're going now, Doctor?
Yes, I'll look in on your husband in the morning.
Stephen?
Yes, Valerie?
Do you mind if I step out into the corridor for a moment?
But you promised not to leave me. I'm afraid, Valerie. Everything's so dark.
The nurse will be here, dear, if you want anything. I just want to ask Dr. Wade some questions.
Questions? But he's already told us.
Yes, Stephen, I know. But I'd like to find out about the treatment and how I'm to take care of you when we get you home, you know. Just little things.
All right. But hurry back. I want you near me.
I will, dear.
Good night, Mr. Denton.
Good night, Doctor. And thank you.
You're quite welcome. After you, Mrs. Denton.
Thank you.
I suggest we step into the consultation room across the hall. We'll have more privacy.
All right.
Here we are.
Thank you.
Well, it's been a long time, Valerie.
Yes, Paul, it has.
Almost 10 years, isn't it?
About that.
Strange that you should have called me, of all people, to treat your husband's eyes.
Oh, I was panicky, Paul. I didn't know what to do. It all happened so suddenly. Stephen was working in his laboratory at the house when suddenly I heard a violent explosion. I ran in and found him clutching his eyes and screaming, "I'm blind!" First thing I thought of was an ambulance. Then you...
Why didn't you think of me 10 years ago?
It's not fair, Paul.
Was it fair to turn your back on me and then to marry a man almost twice your age?
Paul, please, why bring up ancient history?
It isn't ancient history to me. I've never forgotten you.
Paul, about Stephen's eyes.
What about them?
I have a feeling that you weren't telling him the truth.
You're right.
Oh, you mean he's not going to regain his sight? He's going to be blind? Oh, Paul.
You don't expect me to be terribly concerned, do you, Valerie? After all, he did take you away from me.
Don't be vindictive, Paul. It wasn't Stephen's fault. He didn't even know of your existence.
And you never told him that we were on the point of being married?
No, never.
It's rather ironic that we should meet again at the bedside of my rival. Your husband. A man who may forever walk in darkness.
Don't say that, Paul. Horrible.
But unfortunately true. A moment ago, you told me not to be vindictive. I'm not, really. But if I were, I could have my fill of vengeance if I told him about us. And then told him that he'll be blind forever.
You wouldn't, Paul.
Or I might take another form of revenge. I could tell you that an operation is called for. A very delicate operation.
Are you trying to say that there might be a chance?
Yes. But supposing I refuse to perform the operation?
Oh, you're joking. You can't mean that.
Perhaps not. But you call me vindictive. Suppose I operate, and my scalpel slips. What if he dies?
That would be murder. You're not a murderer, Paul. You wouldn't risk your professional reputation. Why must you torment me this way?
You really love him, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Then forget the things that I've been saying. I want you to think of me as a friend. I want you to trust me.
I do trust you, Paul.
Thank you. Now as to the possibility of surgery. Here is the situation. The transparent film over your husband's eyes, the cornea, were burned and torn by the explosion. They've been so damaged that blindness will result, even though the eyes heal.
But you think an operation would cure that?
Possibly, although it's a very delicate job. The injured cornea must be peeled away and replaced by a fresh, healthy one.
Where can you get healthy corneas?
From the eyes of the dead.
Oh.
It isn't quite as horrible as it sounds, Valerie. You know, dying people often will their eyes for just this purpose. We maintain what we call a corneal bank. It's much the same as a blood bank, only that there's this difference. Corneal tissue can't be stored more than 48 hours. It must be fresh, or it's no good.
You have some available in the bank?
No, that's the trouble. I'm afraid we haven't.
But there's got to be some, Paul.
I don't know where, Valerie. Unless...
Unless what?
I was just thinking... Last night, one of the interns asked me to look at a charity case that puzzled him. He lives in a dirty little shack near the water.
Yes, Paul.
I stopped by and examined it, I've found an incurable condition. There's no way to save him. He won't live more than a day or two. But his eyes are healthy.
You mean you think he might...
I don't know. You'd have to have his consent.
Take me to him, Paul. I'm sure I can make him understand.
Oh, it may not be so easy, Valerie. He's a strange person. A mystic. Spiritually.
Let me try. Just take me to him.
All right. We can go there now.
How can anyone live down here, Paul? Wet streets and fog rolling in from the river. I shudder.
You'd be surprised where people are forced to live. That's the house over there. That gray shack.
Does he live alone?
No. There's a toothless old woman. I don't know where he picked her up, who keeps house for him. He's rather hideous and, I suspect, a bit demented. So don't be frightened when you see her.
I'll try not to be.
Here we are. There's no bell.
Those foghorns are giving me cold shivers.
Yes, they do sound eerie. Here comes the old woman.
Yes?
We'd like to see Chandra, please.
You can't. He's getting ready to go away. Chandra's going on a long journey.
Yes, we know. We'd like to see him before he leaves. We are friends of him.
Eh?
I said we are friends of Chandra. I was here last night. Don't you remember?
All right. Come in. His room's at the end of the hall. You know the way. I have to stay here by the stove. I'm cooking something. Yes, something for Chandra's journey.
I see. Come, Valerie.
Something for Chandra's journey.
Oh, she's ghastly.
But harmless, I'm sure. Here, this is the room.
Dark in there.
Yes, there's a lamp burning. But the wick is down. I'll turn it up. There, that's better.
Paul, there on the cot. Is he alive?
Yes, still alive. Sandra. Chandra.
Who calls Chandra?
Dr. Wade. You remember me? I was here last night.
Yes. Chandra remembers, but it is too late. I am going away on a journey.
I know. That's why I've come. I brought a young lady with me, Chandra. He has a favor to ask.
Chandra has no favors to grant. Soon I will start to the other side.
Let her tell you what she wants, Chandra. Go ahead, Valerie.
Chandra.
Well?
Chandra, my husband suffered an accident. An explosion. His eyes. Oh, Paul, I can't. You tell him, please.
All right. Can you hear me, Chandra?
I hear you.
This young lady's husband just lost the sight of both his eyes. He'll be completely blind unless I perform an immediate operation. Unless I take parts of two healthy eyes and place them on him. He's asking that you give her your eyes. Do you understand?
I understand. I am visited by those who would rob me.
But you're going to die anyway.
Die? No, you are wrong. There is no death. I am going on a journey.
Please help me, Chandra.
No, I will need my eyes. I will need them to see into the great beyond, to guide me through eternity. The eyes are the windows of the soul.
I'll give you anything you ask.
No. No, I said no. No, I... Oh.
Oh, something's happened.
dead.
Then it's all right. You can take his eyes.
No, I can't. He refused me.
Paul, listen to me. A doctor's first duty is to the living, to heal them, to make them whole. What responsibility have you to this lifeless thing?
It's a matter of professional ethics, Valerie.
Paul, you've got to do it. For me. Blindness would drive Stephen out of his mind. He's always hated the dark, like a little boy. Paul, please.
It wouldn't be right, though.
It's a matter of life and death, not right or wrong. Paul. Paul, you have your surgical kit with you.
Yes, but...
Paul. Paul. Please. I beg you.
All right. Close the door.
Well, it's good to be home again, Valerie. That hospital room was beginning to get me down.
It's going to be even better once the bandages are taken off.
Yes. Just another week, that's what Wade said. Oh, he's a good doctor, Valerie. I like him.
I'm glad.
Imagine being able to see again after all these weeks of darkness. I've never liked the dark. Why, it will be like coming into a new world. Yes. Yeah. Tell me, what sort of an operation was it, Valerie?
Well, I don't know.
You sound like you're trying to hide something.
Oh, don't be silly, Stephen. Oh, that must be Paul. Dr. Wade, no. I'd better let him in, Stephen. I think Jenny's in bed.
Good evening, Jenkins.
Good evening, Doctor.
Sorry I'm so late, but I have an emergency call.
Oh, it's quite all right.
Hello, Doctor.
Well, how is the patient?
Oh, fine, fine, thank you. And anxious to get these bandages off.
Patience is a virtue.
Yeah. But blindness is a curse.
Don't be so morbid, Stephen. You're very lucky.
Yeah. I know I am. It's a warm night, isn't it, Doctor?
Yes. A lovely night. Stars and a new moon.
They say a new moon's a good omen if you look at it over your left shoulder. Did you know I was superstitious, Doctor?
Well, I guess we all are in one way or another.
Yes. Oh, would it be all right if we took a short walk in the garden while Valerie makes some coffee? That is, if you have the time, Doctor.
Yes. Yeah. Plenty of time.
Well, can't I come along?
Oh, no, this is a stag party. You fix some coffee for us like a good girl, and we'll be back shortly.
All right.
Here, we can go out through the terrace.
Here, let me take your arm.
Thank you, Doctor. What a gorgeous night.
Yes, isn't it? See how the moon is... Oh, sorry, old fellow. I forgot for a moment.
That's all right. I'll be seeing it soon enough, thanks to you. Now you're seeing it for me. Over my left shoulder, I hope.
Why, no. It's the right one.
That's bad luck. But you couldn't possibly bring me bad luck, Dr. Wade. Not after giving me back my sight. You'll never know what you've done for me.
No?
No. You can't possibly know how much it was because you're not in love with Valerie. Valerie's my life, Doctor. So young, so beautiful. Without eyes, how can I see her beauty? I'm getting on in years, you know, and then... There'd be very little left for me if I couldn't look at Valerie and see the warmth of the smile. Oh, I don't expect you to understand that. Nobody can understand it except the one who's in love.
Perhaps you're right. It must be very pleasant to see with the eyes of love, even though the eyes are borrowed.
Borrowed? What do you mean?
Oh, why, nothing. Nothing, really.
That's not the truth, Doctor.
Shall we keep
no,
walking?
No, no, I want you to explain what you meant when you said my eyes are borrowed. It had something to do with the operation you performed, did it not?
Now, look,
I won't be put off. I told you I was superstitious.
Give me back my eyes.
Who said that? Dr. Wade?
Who said what?
Give me back my eyes.
There, a strange voice.
I didn't hear anything.
Yes, yes, I heard a voice saying, give me back my eyes.
Give me back my eyes.
There. There it is again, Doctor. Oh, for the love of heaven, whose voice is it? Tell me. Tell me, I'm blind. I can't see.
I think perhaps we'd better go in.
No, no, no. I tell you, I heard a voice.
Oh, but you're tired. Now, come.
But I... Oh, I can't understand it. I swear I heard a strange, hollow voice.
There was no voice, at least. None that I heard. Here we are. Step up. That's fine.
That's so soon.
I think you'd better go right to bed, Mr. Denton. You're tired and unnerved.
Yes. Yes, I will.
Coffee will be ready in just a few minutes.
Oh, I think I'll retire, Valerie.
Is something wrong, Stephen?
He's tired.
Oh, here, let me help.
No,
you.
No, don't bother, please. I can find my own way. You stay with Dr. Wade. Doctor, are you sure we didn't hear?
I'm positive.
I see. Well, good night.
Good night.
I'll be in shortly, Stephen.
All right.
What happened, Paul?
I'd rather not discuss it.
Please, you must tell me.
Well, it's something I've been worried about.
What do you mean?
I haven't brought this up before because I was hoping against hope that the thing I feared was not true.
Paul, you don't have to hide anything from me. Is something wrong with Stephen?
I'm afraid so. I'm afraid the explosion injured his brain as well as his eye.
Paul.
It isn't going to be easy to take, Valerie.
What happened in the garden?
He said he heard a strange voice say, give me back my eye. Oh, I shouldn't be telling you this, Valerie. You're trembling.
Oh. I'm thinking of that Hindu. Rhonda. You said he was a mystic, a spiritual. Do you think it's possible that... Oh, no, it couldn't be.
No, Valerie. I'm afraid Stephen's brain has been affected. And the horrible part of it is that I'm convinced the complete insanity will set in eventually.
Stephen!
I heard what you said, Doctor.
Oh, Stephen!
It's all right, dear.
Stephen, darling.
Come back into the bedroom, Mr. Denton. I want to talk. No, Valerie. You stay out here. Or better yet, go and get me some hot water.
Hot water?
Yes, I think I'll change these bandages and I'll want the water boiled. So watch it for at least 6 minutes.
Very well. I'll go to the kitchen.
Now, Mr. Denton, shall we go into your room?
It's no use, Doctor.
Let me guide. There. That's fine.
I know you're trying to cheer me up, but I tell you it's no use, Dr. Wade. I understand. I'm going mad.
I'm sorry you overheard. After all, I could be wrong. Although...
Although you know it's true.
I may as well be frank with you, Mr. Denton.
Give me back my eyes.
That voice... I tell you, Doctor, I keep hearing that voice.
Your imagination is working overtime. Now, I'll get you a sedative. Valerie! Oh. Well, here you are. I thought you were in the kitchen getting some water for me.
No, I didn't go. You didn't fool me asking for hot water.
Fool you? I'm afraid I don't understand.
You monster. You horrible monster.
What are you talking about?
Get away from that door. Let me go into my husband. Let me tell him.
Just a moment.
Put your hand off me. Let me go. You should have known right from the beginning. Instead, I trusted you. Had faith in
me. Valerie.
Holding me. Make my skin crawl.
Valerie, I demand an explanation.
You'll get it, all the explanation you want. I suspected something wrong when you sent me for hot water. That was just to get rid of me. Get me out of the way for 6 minutes. But I didn't leave this front room.
Now listen.
I did listen. Bedroom door didn't quite latch. I saw what you did. He couldn't see you because his poor eyes are bandaged. He's blind. But I saw your lips move, and I heard you say the words. Give me back my eyes.
Valerie, will you please let me...
If you don't get your hands on me, you're an unspeakable monster. Trying to drive Stephen mad, playing on his superstitions, his fear of the dark, of the unknown, to turn him into a raving maniac.
Valerie, be quiet.
Quiet? Why, you filthy, desperate... What was that? Stephen! Stephen! He shot himself. He's dead! Oh, Stephen!
Valerie.
Go away. Go away.
Valerie, it was all for the best.
Best?
Let me talk to you, Valerie. I can explain everything.
You murdered me.
I did it for you, darling, for us. Come into the living room and let me explain.
You murdered him. Just as if you'd held that gun to his head and pulled the trigger yourself.
Please, darling.
Away, leave me alone.
Valerie, believe me, I did it to free you from a man who didn't deserve you. I did it so that you could know happiness with me. You're young, Valerie. You have years ahead of you. You're entitled to everything in life. You understand? Come into the living room. We're going to be so happy together. Let me close the door and shut out the last memory of what has gone before. Now, our life is before us. Here. Sit down.
My head, Paul. I have a terrible headache.
I'll get you some aspirin. Where is it?
In Stephen's laboratory. I'll get it.
Let me help you. There.
I think it's on the middle shelf. Turn the light on, Paul. The switch is on the right.
I have it. Let me get the aspirin for you.
I can find them more easily.
I've been thinking, Valerie. After this is all over, we're going away on a trip. Perhaps somewhere off in the mountains, or... You've got the wrong bottle, dear. That's not the aspirin.
No. One of Stephen's chemicals. It's acid, Paul. Sulfuric acid.
Valerie, put it back on the shelf. That stuff will burn.
No, Paul. No, you cold-blooded murderer. You're going to know what Stephen knew before you forced him to take his life. You're going to know what it is to walk in darkness.
Valerie.
Forever.
Down the eyes!
There, my friend, is a young lady who takes literally the old adage, an eye for an eye. Thank you, Boris Karloff and cast, for keeping our growing reputation for horror quite intact. And now, ladies and gentlemen, if you'll follow me, please, I want you to visit the green room. The players are rehearsing our next performance. Come. Come, come.
My night present Boris Karloff as Loomis Horton in The Hunt. Our scene is the Horton Farm, 50 acres of rich, green pasture almost on the edge of the Louisiana bayous. The legendary swampland that for centuries was the spawning ground of black magic and voodoo. The night is warm and dark, with heavy silence broken only by the hum of insects, the chirping of crickets, and the occasional deep-throated croak of a bullfrog off in the swamp. Suddenly, the shadowed outline of a human figure appeared at the edge of a cypress grove behind the weather-beaten Horton house, and a soft, whistled signal rides the still night air. For a long moment, there is no response. Then, a door at the rear of the house opens quietly, and a girl crosses to the cypress grove, her eyes searching the darkness.
Jeff?
What is it?
Jeff, you shouldn't have come. You didn't want to be black moons tonight. I gotta go right back in here, Penny, if he finds me here.
He won't kill nobody. I'm getting fed up with him ruining your life, Julie. Got a mind to tell him a thing or two.
It won't do any good, Jeff.
What right you got keeping you from getting some fun out of living? That's what I want to know.
He's my brother.
That don't give him no right to pin you up. You ain't one of his stinking sheep.
Jeff, please don't so loud. He'll hear you.
I don't much care if he does.
See, Jeff. I'll be the one to suffer.
I'm sorry, Julie. It's gonna make me mad clean through when I think of him treating you the way he does. I'm gonna marry you, Julie, and take you away from here. The story's going around the village.
What do you mean, Jeff?
I don't like to say it, Julie, but the folks are talking about your brother, Loomis.
Talking? I don't understand.
Well, Bert Beasley and Bill Mason come through here night before last hunting coon. Said it's all Loomis out in the east pasture, digging a grave.
A grave?
Yeah. She's burying something. You know what it was, Jim? Got any idea?
No. I don't. But
what?
Oh, I shouldn't be telling you this. Yeah.
It won't go no further, Julie.
Promise.
What did I?
Well, I heard Loomis talking with the hired man. I heard him say something comes out of the swamp at night.
Out of the swamp?
Yes. They don't know what it is. But come dark, Loomis hardly never goes without his shotgun.
Sound like voodoo to me, Julie. I gotta take you away from here. It ain't healthy.
Well, you can't, dear. Not till I'm 18. Not for 2 months, yeah.
How am I gonna sit around for 2 months thinking about you shut up in a house with that crazy man?
You got no right to say that, yeah.
I got every right. Even graves at night. Burying Lord knows what and talking about things coming out of the swamp. I ought to say something to him about all this.
You can say it right now.
Oh. Evening, Mr. Horton.
Get back into the house, Julie.
Hold on a minute, Mr. Horton.
Get into the house.
I'm going, Bye.
Julie, wait.
Let her go.
You got no right treating her like you do.
I got a right to do as I please. She's my sister and she's underage. Now get off my land and don't come back. If I catch you here again, I'll horsewhip you.
I don't scare easy, Mr. Horton.
No. Perhaps I got something in the house that may change your mind. I'll give you 5 minutes to get off my land.
I'll leave when I'm good and ready, and not before.
I'm going back indoors for a shotgun. And if you're still here when I come out again, you'll get a load of buckshot. Remember that.
Dirty low-down skunk. Just let me catch him once off his own land. Just once. I'll beat his ugly head off. What the? Sounds like a wolf from one of the angel wolves out here. No. I mean a wolf out. Oh, no. Come closer. I'm thinking through the cypress grove. I wonder what it is. Big up. I'm afraid there's not much I can tell you, Professor Taylor, except that it happened 5 weeks ago. State police moved in on the case right after the boy's body was found. Frankly, we didn't get very far. It's still an unsolved mystery.
I see. You don't know, of course, why I'm here, Sergeant.
Well, all I know is we had a letter from the State University saying you were coming down to do some research on the case.
Yes, yes, exactly. Now, as I understand it, Sergeant, the boy's throat was considerably lacerated.
Worse than that. Wasn't any throat left.
You're convinced it was an animal.
Well, what else could it be? No human could rip a throat open like that.
Were there any tracks?
No, the ground was pretty hard. And what that is cold was, our bloodhound couldn't pick up a trace of scent. No animals then anyhow. How about human? Well, only the Hortons and a hired man, Andrew. They don't count. Thing happened on Horton Lamp, so naturally you'd expect it.
Yes, 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 of course. Tell me. This Horton you mentioned.
Loomis Horton, his name is.
Does he keep a dog? A savage dog?
No, won't allow one on the place. He investigated the dog gang, but there isn't one like that in the whole parish.
Curious. Very curious. Where is the Horton farm located, Sergeant?
About 7 miles out of town. County road.
Did the boy live or work there?
No. According to Horton's story, Jeff thought it was calling on young Julie. He's Horton's sister. Jeff left about 9:30, and a few minutes later, Horton heard him screaming for help. Horton ran out the back of the house, found Jeff at the edge of the cypress grove. Still in bed.
I'd like a little talk with this Horton, Sergeant.
Well, I don't know. He's a queer duck. Doesn't think much of strangers. And doesn't think much of anybody, as a matter of fact.
Really?
Well, he puts in most of his time looking after his farm and his sheep. Keeps one hired man. Between the two of them, they manage pretty well. Then there's his young sister, the girl Jeff Tuttle was calling on. He doesn't let her out of his sight. She's pretty much cooped up in the house. Nice looking girl, too.
Mm-hmm. Would it be possible to drive out to the Horton farm tonight, Sergeant?
I'll see, 8:10. It's dark by the time we get there.
Well, you're not afraid of the dark, are you?
I'm not afraid of anything I can see. Let's go.
Is it much farther, Sergeant?
About a mile. Look at that.
Look at what?
There, head crossing the road.
Is that a dog?
Good grief.
Speed up, Sergeant. Hurry before it's gone. Look how guy is gleaming out headlights. A yellow fire.
That dog is the biggest one I ever saw.
I'm afraid it's no dog, Sergeant. Quick, swing to the left. Keep your lights on it. You notice anything?
Starting around, heading for the cypress grove.
Yes, but notice the color of that peculiar gray.
It's gone.
And the fangs, the pointed ears, the way it moved. Didn't it remind you of a wolf? Let's go after it. No, wait, Sergeant. No use. Not in this darkness. We'll never find it in that thick grove.
Yes, you're right. Did you think it was a wolf?
I said it reminded me of one.
Well, we don't have wolves in this section, Professor.
Yes, I know. Sergeant, I think it's time I told you the kind of research I intend doing. Do you know what lycanthropy is?
No, can't say I do.
Well, it's a form of madness, a disease of the mind. Those who are afflicted with it imagine they've turned into wild animals. They develop a taste for blood and often commit violence when the spasm seizes them. Once the seizure is over, they return to normalcy, but no knowledge of what occurred.
Sounds pretty horrible.
Yes, it is horrible. You understand there's no physical change except the deepening of the voice, as far as we know.
As far as you know.
Well, some authorities believe the disease may be so deeply rooted in certain human beings that when a spasm seizes them, their actual physical appearance is altered. They take on the form as well as the habits of wild beasts. They are called werewolves. Men who turn into wolves. What's the matter, Sergeant? Why did you jump?
It just kind of hit me. Bloodhounds not finding any animal scent, and that gray thing we just saw run across the room.
We mustn't leap to conclusions, Sergeant. No true werewolf has ever been found, although there are many alleged eyewitness accounts claiming that such creatures have been seen, particularly in the Balkan countries of Europe. Thus far, though, we have no positive scientific proof that werewolves really exist.
Hope they don't.
So do I, Sergeant. I devoutly hope so. That's the case of this young man whose throat was torn out. Presents some aspects I'd like to investigate.
I'm beginning to see what you're thinking about.
I suggest we drive on to the Horton farm, Sergeant.
Doesn't seem to be anyone home. Right upstairs, out in the parlor. Someone goes out at night.
How old a man would you say he is?
45, 6. Somebody's coming.
Yes? Who is it? Sergeant Moran.
State police.
Dr. Lovett.
Sergeant Lovett. Don't be scared when you see him, Professor. He's not too pretty to look at. Sergeant Sturdy, Mr. Horton, but...
What do you want?
This is Professor Taylor, State University.
I'm pleased to meet you, Mr. Horton.
Yes? What is it? May we come in?
How is that kind of bad?
We'll be just a few minutes. After you, Professor.
Thank you.
Professor Taylor came down from the university to do a little investigating on Jeff Tuttle case, Mr. Horton. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Sick and tired of answering questions. I've told you all I know.
What more do you want?
You can explain it better than I can, Professor. Go ahead.
Yes, of course. Well, you see, Mr. Horton, my investigation is purely scientific. It has nothing whatsoever to do with the police.
Now,
I'm merely trying to determine whether the brutal attack on the young man was made by a human or an animal. Or perhaps a combination of both.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You've heard of werewolves, haven't you, Mr. Horton?
No, and I'm not interested.
I told you I've had enough of questions. Hasn't a man a right to a little privacy?
Well, there's no need to get sore about it, Horton.
I don't like being questioned. I don't like to have people barging in on me at all hours of the night. This is my house, and I'm going to live in it the way I see fit. Which means without uninvited visitors.
Of course, Mr. Horton. It isn't my intention.
And another thing. I own the property from the county road to the bayou and north to Kurt Schultz's pasture. If you took the time to notice, the land's posted.
Now, this is a warning.
The next person, man, woman, or child, who sets foot on my land is going to get a load of buckshot. Is that clear?
You're in bad humor tonight, Horton.
Never mind my bad humor. Get out. Both of you. Get out and stay out.
Norman, what's the matter? Why are you out?
Julie! What are you doing in the kitchen? Didn't I tell you to stay up in your room? Don't how you dare come down that rear stairway with my back turned.
I just wanted to find out if you'd asked Andrew about my land. How many were killed?
Get upstairs to your room or out.
Go and Loomis, don't be angry.
I presume that was your sister, Mr. Horton?
Lovely girl.
Good night, gentlemen. Get off my property and don't come back unless you're invited.
Sorry, Professor. Looks like we're being asked to leave.
Oh, that's quite all right. Thank you anyway, Mr. Horton. Perhaps some other evening you'll grant me a few minutes of your time.
Now you know what sort of a job we had with him.
I must say, he isn't very sociable.
Yeah, watch the steps. They're not too solid.
Oh, yeah. His sister doesn't resemble him in any.
Oh, he's rather pretty. Did you hear how he screamed at
it? Yes. Poor child.
Might as well head back to town, I guess. Horton didn't rise to your bait when you mentioned werewolves. So looks like a hunt will be the next best thing.
A hunt, Sergeant?
Yes. Get a bunch of men together and beat the Sabbath groves for that animal we saw crossing the road. Might even risk going into the swamp. Wolf or whatever it is, I won't be satisfied unless killed.
I'm afraid I feel the same way, Sergeant. But before you organize a hunt, I wonder if it's safe to do a little snooping around here first.
What do you mean?
Something the girl said disturbed me. Something about lambs being killed.
That's right. She did say she wanted to know if Horton hired man had told him how many of her lambs were killed.
Yes, and that may be significant. Werewolves are supposedly fond of slaughtering sheep. You think we might talk with the hired man?
Chances are he's over in the barn. He's got a room there built out of a horse stall. Take a look.
It might be a good idea.
It's over this way. Keep an eye out for Horton. He may come gunning for us. I don't trust him.
I wouldn't be too concerned. Men who rant and roar rarely danger.
Wait a minute. Hold up.
What is it?
Somebody hiding behind that bush on your left.
All right. Come up with your hands up or I'll shoot. What's your sergeant? Find your flash on the
cut. Yes, certainly.
There. Andrew, hired man.
I ain't done nothing. Well, it's dying.
Why were you hiding behind that bush?
I got scared. I heard voices in the gravel.
What were you doing out here?
Burying the sheep and the lambs.
What was that? Since when do you bury sheep and lambs?
Well, these got to be. Mr. Holton said so. They run afoul of the critter.
What critter?
Only the Lord knows. We got strange goings on round here. Mighty strange. Always said put too close to the bayou. Can't help it. Them swamps is full of things.
Where are you burying the sheep, Andrew?
Right over there. Put them in the truck guard, Mr. Horton said. Good and deep.
Let's have a look at them, Sergeant.
All right.
See? There they are. Four ewes and two of Miss Julie's baby lambs.
All with their throats torn out.
Yeah. It's the critter from the swamp. Same one got Jeff Tuttle.
When did this happen, Andrew?
The lambs got took night before last. Lost three ewes on Sunday and one last night.
Has it ever happened before?
Been going on most 2 years. Not regular, though. 1 month will go by and the critter don't show up. Stood beside him once a bit.
When was this?
Last spring. Seen him behind the pump house. About to scare me half to death. The way his eyes glowed like a swamp fire. Wasn't time to draw no beads. Missed him, I guess. What did he look like, Andrew? Couldn't tell. Too dark. All I seen was his eyes glowing yellow. Might have been a sheep-killing collar, though. One of them wild ones.
I very much doubt it. You're thinking of what we saw on the road tonight, Professor? That, animal, whatever it was.
Yes, if it was an animal.
Why do you say that?
Just look at these dead sheep. See where I'm placing my lights? Their back legs are. An ordinary animal would have nipped the legs and torn at their rumps. There's not a mark on them, except at their throats. Somebody's come gravel crunching.
Must be Horton. Back behind the bush, Professor. We don't want him to catch us here. Don't say anything, Andrew.
Blow. Here come. That's quite on by the bush.
How long is it going to take you to get those carcasses buried?
All night.
Ain't too easy in the dark. Be better with a lantern.
I told you, no light. Send me the other spade. I'll help you. Start shoveling.
Kind of like a shame to be pushing good meat underground.
How many times must I tell you it isn't good meat?
Poison. Don't look poison.
I say it is. And I'm warning you, shut your mouth about it.
You hear that, Sergeant?
Yes. I'm going to try to sneak back to the house and talk to the girl. You better come with me.
All right.
Keep down on top of the path, but stay off the gravel. I've got a hunch we're going to uncover something tonight.
Yes. Perhaps more than we realize.
Go, don't let him find
you. Now, don't worry about us, Julie. We want to help you. Why does your brother keep you locked in the house?
He says it's for my own good. But that's not true. I know why he does it.
Why?
There's something going on. Something he doesn't want me to see. Something that isn't human.
What do you mean, Miss Horton?
I can't explain it, but... Well, I'm sure he murdered Jeff. I'm sure.
What makes you so sure, Julie?
The night with Tim.
Yeah, go on.
He sent me into the house. He was out there alone with Jeff. It was dark. Pitch dark.
Go ahead, Julie.
I heard their voices. My brother was shot with Jeff. He said he'd kill him if he didn't get off the property.
I think we'd better get her out of here, Sergeant.
No, I can't go. I can't.
Why not, Julie?
He'll follow me. He'll do to me what he did to Jeff.
Sergeant, someone's coming. Huh? I hear footsteps on the front porch. I could get her out the back way. Take her to the car and wait for me there. You know where it's back. The county road right at the entrance to the farm.
Yes, yes. Well, come, my dear.
No. No, I'm afraid.
There's nothing to be afraid of. Everything's going to be all right.
Julie, where are you?
She's gone, Horton.
What are you doing here?
I want to talk to you.
Where's my sister? What have you done with her?
I told you, she's gone.
Where is she? Answer me, where is she?
You don't have to worry, she's safe.
Safe? Safe? Tell me where she is.
No, Horton, take it easy. She's with Professor Taylor. We're going to take her away from here.
You're going to take her away. You're going to take her away. Over my dead body.
Don't be a fool, Horton. Put that
face. Put it. Julie. Julie. Julie.
Sergeant, wake up. You've got to wake up. Terrible things have happened. Sergeant. Please wake up. I hate it, I tell you. I hate the creature. It's come from the swamp again.
What happened?
Sergeant, it's me, Andrew. We gotta go after it.
After what?
The creature. I hate it. I howling for blood.
Where? Where's it?
Out near the county road.
Good fellow. It's opening up. Hurry. Are you sure Horton came this way, Andrew?
Yep. I seen him running crazy like. Then I heard the howling, like a wolf howl it was. Only worse. Never yet nothing scared me so. Closed my breath.
How much further do we have to go?
The gate's up ahead. Road just beyond it.
Here, you take the flashlight, I'll handle the gun.
It's looking sharp.
Don't worry.
Ah, there's the gate. Nope.
Swing your light.
Yeah.
Wait. Hold it.
Lord have mercy.
What? Professor Taylor. Lying in the road and Horton bending over. He's all covered with blood. Horton! Horton, get away from him! Get away or let the hell go! No, no, no!
You got him.
Professor, are you all right?
Yes, I'm all right.
Horton!
He's dead.
So bleeding, Professor. Let's get your doctor.
No, no, wait, wait. Across the road in the bushes near the cypress grove.
What?
Is it? It's a swamp critter.
Shoot, Sergeant. Shoot into the brush. Don't let it get away. Think you got it.
Good. Come on, Andrew. We'll take a look.
Coming. Flash your light.
There. In the bushes. Lord have mercy. What is it?
It's an animal. With a human face. Must be a werewolf.
Dead, ain't it? Shot through the head.
Sure. Come on back. You were right, Professor. Looks like a werewolf.
That's what it is. It attacked me.
Horton fought it off.
What?
You mean he had nothing to do with it?
No, but he knew all the time. He'd known for years.
What did he know?
The werewolf was his sister, Julie.
Man lives in a world of time and space. He lives in a spectrum of the universe. When he ventures beyond this limit, he is in the unknown, a realm where strange forces are brought into play. When man attempts to misuse these forces, he is sometimes destroyed. This is Macabre. The Far East Network presents, in special performance, Macabre. Tonight's story, Final Resting Place.
Doesn't look like the road. Honey, I think we're lost.
It has to be right, Sue. Just as the piece back at Carterville said the lake was on the main highway. We haven't made any turns.
But, darling, it's getting dark. This road doesn't look well-traveled. I really think we made a wrong turn somewhere.
Mrs. Kent, your husband solemnly promises to deliver his bride of a few hours safely and surely to Honeymoon Lodge on Mirror Lake. Now, let's hear no more about it. Come on, move closer. Head on my shoulder. That's it.
Roger. You better watch the road.
Why? We haven't passed another car for an hour. Relax, Sue. It's a fine way to start a married life of bliss.
Look, there's a sign. Can you make it out?
Yeah. Randolph, 5 miles.
Are we supposed to go this way?
Sure. What'd I tell you? It's only 50 miles farther. Randolph is our halfway point.
But this country road, how can they call a lonely trail like this a highway?
You're just a sophisticated cityite. Now close your eyes and listen to the radio. We'll be there before you know it.
All right, darling. I guess I'm getting jumpy.
Head on my shoulder and not another word. Okay?
Okay.
interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. Authorities of the state asylum have just issued the following warning. A dangerous homicidal maniac escaped custody this morning and is believed to be in the vicinity of Randolph.
Roger.
He's 45 years of age, weighs 200 pounds, has thick gray hair, and answers to the name of Dr. Vardmore. We repeat, this man is a dangerous killer. Those in the vicinity of Randolph are urged to take extra precaution tonight. Since this killer is armed, the public is warned against walking alone or driving at night on the quiet roads near Randolph. Report all suspicious persons to the county sheriff's office. Now we return you to Stars of Music.
Roger, did you hear that?
Sure, but how does it concern us?
Darling, we are driving down a country road near Randolph. Suppose we should have car trouble or a flat tire.
Boy, you are getting jumpy.
Let's stop in Randolph for the night.
But Sue, our reservations at Mirror Lake are for tonight.
Roger, I have the strangest feeling. If we don't stop at Randolph, we'll never reach Mirror Lake.
Great idea, Sue.
What, darling?
Stopping here for the night? Now we can see the carnival.
It's all right while these people are here, I guess. But we'd better go back to the hotel before they leave.
Are you still afraid?
Well, kinda. Aren't you?
Come on. I'll show you a good time. You'll forget all about it.
Okay. What's that man doing over there?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, if you'll kindly step closer...
I don't know. Let's find out.
I will demonstrate for you one of the great marvels of all time. As you see at my feet is a hole, an excavation 6 feet in depth, a grave, if you will. And beside me here is a casket. Now, friends, what do you think we are going to do?
What would you want to do?
Now, friends, ladies and gentlemen, have no fear. Tonight, I, Professor Vincent, will select someone, one of you from the audience, to be hypnotized and placed in this casket. Then I will bury him alive for 5 days.
If he's not buried that long, he ain't gonna wind up much alive.
Just a moment, please. 5 days at $100 a day. Now what do you say? Who wants to make $500? There is absolutely no danger. A shaft will be sunk so that we can see your head. You'll get plenty of light and air. Food will be lowered to you. Nothing to it at all. Who'll be the first volunteer?
You got as popular an undertaker, pal.
Come now, ladies and gentlemen. Under hypnosis, believe me, 5 days will seem like an hour. The easiest $500 you've ever made. Who will volunteer? How about you, my bumpkin comedian friend?
No, sir, Ray. Last year I took sick with pneumonia. Not sure I end up in one of them boxes.
Did you recover? It's hard to tell from looking at you. You, sir, what is your name?
Roger, he's pointing at you.
I don't think I'd be interested.
Who are you, sir?
Roger Kent.
Roger Kent, does $500 interest you?
Well, sure, but...
Good. Good, you'll make a fine subject.
Now, wait a minute.
And, Roger, who is the young lady with you?
My wife, Sue.
Oh? And what do you say, Mrs. Kent?
Why, I think it's just a dreadful idea. No.
You better pick someone else, Professor.
Nonsense. Do you need the money?
We do need it. But not this way, Roger. It's awful.
$500 would pay off the car. We still have 10 days left for our honeymoon, Sue.
Well, how about it, friends?
Don't let him tempt you. I don't like that man.
He does a lot of money for only 5 days.
We can't wait all night. What do you say?
I don't know.
Say no, Roger.
Speak up. Yes or no.
I hate to turn it down.
You're not going to be buried in that terrible coffin. Tell him no.
Go ahead, pal. We got a first-class cemetery.
All right, everyone. Roger and Sue, time's up. Tell you what I'll do. Think it over. If you decide to go through with it, come back after a couple of hours when the carnival is closed for the night. I'll be waiting for you in my trailer.
Oh, Roger, he wants you. I'm afraid of that man.
Don't forget, I'll wait up for you until you decide one way or the other. Roger Kent will hold the grave open for you.
Roger, I I'm afraid.
Listen, Sue, my mind's made up.
But suppose...
Face up to it. We need the money. That's the easiest $500 I ever heard of.
Darling, I know that.
Then what's the matter?
Well, in the first place, we shouldn't be out here in the dark with that madman loose. In the second place...
Professor Vincent seems too interested in me.
Oh, Roger, you read my mind. I'm just trying to protect you, honey. That man, I don't know. There's something wrong.
Admit it, Sue. You don't like the Buried Alive act. Isn't that it?
Yes, I guess so. It's horrible.
I thought so. Uh-oh, this must be his trailer. Professor Vincent, here it is.
Roger.
Yeah?
If he answers, there'll be no turning back. It'll be too late.
I know. No turning back.
Professor Vincent?
Come in, Roger and Sue. Come in.
Did you really think we'd come?
I was certain. You see, there is no other way. When I count three, Roger, you will be asleep. Sound asleep on your feet. Then, Roger, you will be placed in the coffin and lowered into the grave for your 5-day rest. Now look deeply into my eyes. Deeply. Inhale and look deeply into my eyes. You're going to sleep, Roger. To sleep. You can no longer move your arms. They hang helpless at your side. Sleep, Roger. Close your eyes and sleep. One, two, your eyes are closed. And now you are powerless to open them. You are three, asleep.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to place Roger Kent in the casket. Whom among you in the audience will help me?
I will, Professor.
All right, my friend. Step right up here now. Here, help me raise the lid of this coffin.
Now, give me his feet and we'll put him in.
Careful. He's a big man. There. He's in.
Guy, heavy as a rock. Just like a dead man.
Yes, now, close the lid. Close it. Now we're ready to lower into the grave. You see, the casket is supported over the open hole by two chains. If you'll flip that switch the same time I flip this one, Mr. Kent will be gently deposited in his grave.
This one?
Yes. There it goes.
Glory be. Just like a real funeral. Reminds me of the time we buried my grandpappy.
Ladies and gentlemen, in just a few moments, the coffin will lie at the bottom of the grave. We will then place an air shaft down to Mr. Kent's head so that he will be able to breathe. And all of you will be able to see him at 25 cents apiece.
I don't know. I just don't know.
Thank you, friend. You've done your work now. Will you kindly leave? Thank you. You are witnessing the marvel of the age. A human being buried alive. The casket has stopped. Will another volunteer from the audience help me position the air shaft?
How about me?
Fine. Step up here, friend, if you please.
You picked the right one this time, Governor.
So?
I used to work in a funeral parlor. Handle the stiff.
Yes, now. Now, just pick up that end of the metal shaft, please. Easy does it now. Down over the round opening on the casket lid. Careful now. There. Thank you very much, my friend. Neat, very neat.
Okay, Governor. What next?
The shovel. The hole must be covered up.
Oh, sure.
And that is it, ladies and gentlemen. You have just seen demonstrated the marvel of the age. A man buried alive. Kent will lie there in a deep slumber. The end of which time we'll dig him up and pay him $500. In the meantime, my friend, you may step up here and view him down the shaft with a small sum of 25 cents, one quarter, the one-fourth part of a dollar. Ladies and gentlemen, who will be first among you?
No, sir.
What's that you say?
Dishonest, I say.
What's the matter with you?
Charging money to see him buried alive.
What?
I don't know. I helped you lift him in.
Leave the carnival, sir. Leave here immediately.
That man ain't buried alive. He's dead.
Hello?
Hello, Mrs. Kent. This is Professor Vincent. I got your message. First chance I've had to call you.
Oh, Professor, I'm so glad you did.
What's on your mind?
How is Roger?
I keep telling you he's all right. Now, you must stop this nonsense.
Well, it's been 3 days since he was buried, and he just lies there so still. Oh, if I could only talk to him.
Mrs. Kent.
I called down to him, but he never moves or opens his eyes. And after all this time, I know something is wrong. Roger wouldn't let me worry like this. He'd at least look up and smile, if he could.
How many times must I repeat he is hypnotized?
We interrupt this program for a special news bulletin.
Oh, just a moment, Professor. The radio...
Sheriff's office has just confirmed the whereabouts of the homicidal maniac who escaped from the state asylum 3 days ago. This dangerous killer who calls himself Dr. Bardmore is now known to be in the immediate vicinity of Randolph. Everyone is cautioned against walking alone on the streets after dark. If you plan to attend the carnival, kindly do so with friends and leave the carnival in the company of others. Report all suspicious persons. We return you now to your regular program.
Did you hear that on the radio?
Yes, I did.
Oh, Professor, I'm terribly afraid. I don't want Roger alone down there with this madman, Lou. Please, Professor, dig Roger up tonight.
Mrs. Kent, we made a bargain, a business proposition. Kindly stay in your hotel room and rest. This is the third day. The day after tomorrow, it will be all over for Roger and for you.
Pardon me, ma'am. Are you Mrs. Kent?
Why, yes. Who are you?
I'm the one who helped put your husband in the casket.
Well, why are you talking to me?
I don't know. Just to warn you, I guess. I think your husband's dead.
Oh, you horrible, horrible little man. Get away from me. I'll call the police.
That's you, Mrs. Kent.
Oh, Professor Vincent, I'm so glad to see you. A terrible little man.
Yes, I heard what he said. Now get hold of yourself and listen to me carefully. This is the fifth night. I want you to go to the hotel and wait until the carnival is over. Tonight is the last showing at Randolph. At 11:30, you take a taxi out here to the lot. I'll meet you. Roger will be ready along with the $500.
All right, Professor. Anything you say. Oh, thank God it's about to end.
Yes, my dear. It's all about to end.
Are you going out, Miss Kent?
Yes, clerk. And here's the key to my room.
Thank you. I don't think it's wise, though. I mean, you're going out alone. It's after 11 and mighty dark tonight.
The police haven't caught the killer yet?
No. Funny thing, too. Looks like he'll have to leave a fresh trail. You know, kill somebody so they'll have more to go on. Now, why don't you take someone with you?
Oh, I'll be all right. I'm meeting Professor Vincent at the carnival lot. This is the night they released my husband.
I see.
Do you know the professor?
Oh, yes, I do.
Well, he's the one who hypnotized Mr. Kent.
No. Professor Vincent didn't.
What?
Professor got sick 5 days ago.
Got sick? Well, then who was Professor Vincent at the carnival?
I don't know. Somebody who took his place, I guess.
Here you are, driver. Thank you. Professor Vincent, so dark. I'm sure the carnival was on this vacant lot, but now there's nothing. Just a few old papers blowing in the wind. Why did I let that cab leave? No light in sight. Those trees around the lot. What if the killer were hiding there? Oh, the place Roger was buried. It was in this direction. This way. Maybe I can find it. My grandma will be shot when he dug him up and filled the hole. Must be right around here. Oh, where is it? What's this? A mouse!
They can't do that. They went away and left you buried. Oh, Roger, I'll get you out, honey. Oh, my darling, I'll help you. I'll dig up.
was watching me from those trees. I saw it move. I gotta get out of here. I'll be back, Roger. There's no night filling station 5 blocks away. Maybe I can make it there. Oh, it moved again. There is someone out there. Roger, Roger, is that you? No, it's coming after me. It's too big for Roger. I don't know what it is. It's gaining on me. I can't let it catch me. No, no, help!
Mrs. Kent, calm yourself, please.
Who are you?
Don't you know? I'm Professor Vincent. I was waiting for you. Now, come with me to my trailer.
No, you're not Professor Vincent.
So, you guessed.
Who are you?
There's nothing to be alarmed about. You're in safe hands at last. I am Victor. Dr. Victor Vardmore.
I better sleep, I guess. Legs feel cramped. Mind's foggy. Can't remember what happened. Sue, where are you? Dark. Pitch black. Must be night. Quiet. Not a sound. I could only remember. Think back. Smells damp, like fresh earth. Where am I? Gotta get up, stretch my leg. No rooms. Wait a minute. There was this carnival. Professor Vincent. Oh, it's beginning to come back. I was hypnotized and put in a casket. Buried for 5 days, yeah. Yeah, it's clear now. Time's up, yeah. They're gonna dig me up now. Boy. The deep hypnotic spell that old boy put me in. Glad it's over. Okay, Professor. You can bring me up now. I guess he stepped away from the shaft. Shaft? Where's the shaft? It's supposed to be over my head here so I can see up. Can't see a thing. Cloth-lined coffin lid where shaft should be. What's going on here? I'd like to get out, Professor. Possible they went away and left me buried alive? Oh, no. Professor! Sue! Help! I'm buried alive! Good Lord. Help! Gotta get out. Help me, somebody! Don't leave me down here to die! Help! Push harder! More! No use. No budge. Help! I'm gonna die. You left me here to die. Can't call for help. Nobody to hear me. Carnival left. Nothing up there but a vacant lot, edge of town. Somebody came back. How could he tell I was down here buried? Oh, God, don't let this happen to me. Please. Help me. Save me, God. Don't let this... I don't want to die. I'm hearing things.
This is Professor Vincent. Now listen carefully.
Where are you? Get me out of here.
Don't fret. Your oxygen supply won't last much longer.
Oxygen?
You're buried alive, Roger. And I'm not coming back for you.
Not going back?
I'm leaving you buried there.
Well, Professor... I'll kill you.
Roger, tell me how.
I'll kill...
Don't excite yourself any further, or the oxygen pellet won't sustain your lungs. You are hearing my voice in a small, shortwave receiver and transmitter near your head. I am talking to you from my trailer about a block from you. Sue is with me, Roger. I want you to listen very, very carefully.
Sue, there.
Go ahead, Sue. Tell him.
Oh, Roger... Are you all right?
Yes. What's he doing with you?
Please do as he says, darling. He's not the real professor. He's that escaped madman from the asylum, Dr. Vardmore.
He's crazy, Sue.
Please, darling, we have no choice.
Please, quick.
Listen to me. One move like that, and I will kill you both. I've gone to a lot of trouble to set up my final demonstration.
What are you going to do?
I am going to try personality transference. We have the required situation. A man buried alive in mortal fear of death. And the woman he loves who will do anything to save him.
If we do, as you say, what then?
I will release the two of you.
And if we don't?
You have just enough oxygen for just a few more minutes.
I see.
Hurry, Dr. Vonmer. Get it over with.
Now, Roger, I want you to think about Sue. Sue, you about Roger. Each imagine he is the other. Roger, you are standing beside me in the trailer. Sue, you are lying down there in the casket.
No!
Cooperate and I will free you. It's your only way out of that grave.
You mean I'll be in Sue's?
Yes, and she in yours.
Do it, darling. It's our only chance.
He's not Sue.
That's enough. One more refusal, and I'll turn off the shortwave transmitter and leave you in your dark world forever. Now, Roger, imagine you are Sue standing here. Sue, you concentrate on being Roger in the casket. Think. Put everything else out of your minds. I have it. Repeat something you both know. Say the 23rd Psalm. Here we go now. Start with me. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures.
He leadeth me beside still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in paths of righteousness. For his name's sake,
even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for thou art with me.
Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table.
Roger! Sue! Help me! Don't leave me down here! The oxygen! It's going! Save me! Take me up! I'm dying! No, I am!
And so, dear listeners, we leave behind the creeping footsteps of Walk in the Darkness, the desperate chase of the hunt, and the chilling inevitability of Final Resting Place. These stories remind us that horror is not always about monsters in the dark, but about the fear that stirs in the human heart and the fates we cannot escape. Thank you for joining me on Stories Fable's Ghostly Tales. If tonight's episode sent shivers down your spine, consider subscribing, leaving a review, or sharing this podcast with fellow lovers of eerie tales. Your support keeps these forgotten voices alive. What you're hearing is a completely remastered set of episodes, straight from the 1940s and above, that no one else would have heard in this style. And before I sign off, I do want to say a huge thank you to my Patreon supporters. First is my amazing, jaw-dropping, majestic friend, Matt O'Star, the Ode Knight T Titan. So, before we let the shadows close in completely, I must take a long pause to honor our Ode Knight T Titan, Matt O'Star. Matt O, much like the whispering tension in Walk in Darkness, you carry with you a patience that steadies the soul. Where others might panic at unseen footsteps in the dark, your perceptive eye catches the details, always watching, always seeing what others miss. In the hunt, where predator and prey circle endlessly, it is kindness like yours that reminds us the true measure of strength is not in pursuit or escape, but in compassion and care. And in Final Resting Place, where inevitability presses heavy upon the living, I imagine you, Matto, standing calm and resolute, patience unshaken. You remind us that not all endings are to be feared. Some can be faced with quiet strength and a steady hand. So, tonight, dear Titan of the Night, I thank you deeply for your kindness, your careful attention, and ever-patient support. You are a champion. These ghostly tales would echo far less brightly, or not at all, without your support. Thank you, Matt O'Star, my friend, for holding the lantern high. And now I want to thank my White Tea Warlords, of which I'm lucky to have Leza, our mighty gem-forged warrior, the White Tea Warlord who lifts heavier than most mortals dare. If ever the chase in The Hunt came your way, the hunter wouldn't stand a chance. You just bench press the forest out of the way and keep walking. And Maya, my next White Tea Warlord, queen of cats, whiskers and purrs. If the shadows in Walk in the Darkness grew too close, I know you'd unleash 100 feline guardians, each one sharper-eyed than the last, ready to stalk what stalks us. And Sangeetha, my final white tea warlord, the seer, whose vision pierces like a lantern in fog. Just as Final Resting Place asks what fate awaits us, your insight would already know the path ahead, and perhaps even bend it in our favor. Thank you for keeping the shadows at bay, legends, each of you, Titan and warlords alike, standing guardians of the tea-lit halls of stories, fables, ghostly tales. And lastly, I want to thank my Earl Grey enforcers and tears thereafter. I am also lucky to have Chad Warren, Divided by Zero, Juicebox Andy, Just Heather, Paige Kramer, Peter Raffaelli, Seductive Smiles, Jane Gumnick, and Michael Krupp. Thank you so much for your never-ending support. Have a wonderful, brilliant week ahead, my Patreon supporters. And to all my lovely listeners that are still listening, thank you so much for your time. And as always, until next, we meet.
Walk slow. The shadows know. I took a walk in darkness, silence held its breath. Each step a ghost beside me, packed with whispered death. Lanterns flicker faintly, but the night won't let me see. Is it fear that hunts behind me, or the shadow inside me? Footsteps echo, doubled pace. A cold hand brushes, unseen face. The night won't answer, only hides. I feel it closing from all sides. Run if you can, but the dark runs faster. The shadows never die. In the hunt I'm running circles, predator or prey. Teeth behind the branches, that never stray. Every choice a tightening snare, every breath a test. And when I reach the clearing, will I be cursed or blessed? Final resting place, carved in stone. Destiny's hands won't leave me alone. What's chosen, what's chance, what's written in flame, we all end beneath the same carved name. Run if you can, but the dark runs faster. The hunt concludes with a ghostly master. Graves are supporters, you lift us so high. Mato Star, Lizasaurus, Maya, Sangeetha. We sing your names, you shine. with love and